grade 1 or grade 2? If it has dots, it's covered here on the Sarah Talk Podcast Network.
Comments on the new Sarahspectives are those of the individuals and do not represent Sarotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Welcome to Sarahspectives for September 2011, this month in Access Tech. I am Michael Loff. Joining me tonight, first off, is our producer, Joe Steinkamp. How you doing, buddy?
Good evening, everyone.
And he's also a part of That Android Show. One episode down, another one in the can, or coming up pretty soon, about all things Android.
Pinch hitting tonight for EOL as well, so I'm actually covering two bases. So End of Line Show, which just released episode 2, so that's hosted by myself and Ricky Enger in a roving third chair.
He's a busy man. He's a busy man, I say. Also joining us, it's Lisa Salinger. And is it Salinger? It's Salinger.
Salinger.
Yes.
Very glad to be here.
She also has a major role in Sarahspectives and future productions and other podcasts through the Sarah Talk Podcast Network. Also joining us with, I'm going to call it a major announcement, is Peter Bosley. How's it going, buddy?
Hi, everybody. Tonight we're announcing the latest in the Sarah Talk Podcast Network shows, and this one is going to be called Triple Click Home. And as the name implies, this will be an iOS/Apple show, and it'll be hosted by Jeff Bishop, who everyone's familiar with, and myself and Buddy Brandon from Sarahtech will be on those shows as well. I'm just as bad as Michael is tonight.
All right,
yeah, and just so everybody. Just so everybody knows, we've actually been working on that for a little bit, and so it felt a little weird tonight to announce that, but it also seems a little right as well.
Well, before we do the September headlines, there's two events that took place in October. We have the announcement of the iPhone 4S that folks can start ordering tomorrow. But also the big event that has just flooded Twitter and the internet in general, even mainstream media, was Apple co-founder and CEO Steve Jobs passed away yesterday. He was 56 years of age. And we have 9 audio comments and a wealth of email messages. We're going to read about 3 of those for you. But before we do that, I do want to mention that Sarahspectives, this month in Access Tech, is sponsored tonight by Vanda Pharmaceuticals. Improve the quality of your sleep and possibly make money at the same time. Learn more by going to www.non24registry.com. Okay. We have 9 audio files. 5 were from individuals using iReport. It's built into iBlink Radio, something we would not have today were it not for Steve Jobs and the iPhone. And then 4 were some of the well-known podcasters in Access Technology. So I'm going to play all 9 of these, just let them roll. First, we will hear from Brad Hodges speaking on behalf of AFB, American Foundation for the Blind. Then we'll hear 4 messages from iReport and the other folks who introduced themselves, some podcasters. You'll know many of these voices. So we'll let it roll.
This is Brad Hodges with the American Foundation for the Blind, AFB Tech, in Huntington, West Virginia. And on behalf of everybody in the AFB family, we certainly extend our condolences to the family of Steve Jobs and to all who work at Apple. So many people have commented on the contributions of Steve Jobs and his insight into human nature as much as into technology. And I think for folks who are blind and visually impaired, the legacy that Mr. Jobs leaves to our community is to demonstrate beyond the shadow of a doubt that when an organization decides to provide and maintain accessibility in its products and services, it can do so. It is continuously amazing and wonderful to realize that every time we hear about a new product or service from Apple, we can now expect that it will be accessible to blind and visually impaired customers, and that most of the time, in fact, all the time, really, that expectation is met. And we encourage other companies to look to their own development processes and their own commitment and emulate this incredible standard that Steve Jobs and Apple has set.
Good morning. I understand you're looking for a reaction to the death of Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs was an amazing inventor and gratefully had the vision to help work with accessibility. For that, I'm grateful. However, I'm not going to immortalize him. All I'm going to do is say thank you. Continue to use the products that he made available to me and be grateful for them. Thank you.
Hi, this is Jenny Kennedy from Mace, Kansas with Guide Dog Heather. I would like to comment on Steve Jobs. I've never met him, but his vision has impacted my life in a wonderful way. I've been a Mac user for 3.5 years and an iPhone user for 2, and these two devices make me just as free as my guide dog does. With these devices, I can take care of my family, pay bills, do shopping, do everything that I couldn't do before. And I just want to thank Steve for being so forward-thinking in access as a right. And I'm very sad that he's gone. And that's pretty much it. Have a good day. Bye. Hi, this is Jenny Kennedy.
I just wanted to say that Steve Jobs was a definite icon in our day as far as a man who has done a lot, not only for just the computer world, but for those of us that are blind and handicapped and all, and just an appreciation for and a respect for what he's done, and of course expressing my condolences to his family for their loss, and to those in the company who loved him and felt close to him and have lost a friend. And we've lost a man who has done a great deal of things to help us, and we appreciate him. Thanks so much.
Hey, what Steve Jobs means to me is, you know, since he made the iPhone, you know, accessible with voice, I'm able to download the Bible app and be able to read the Bible, finally, for the first time ever. That's what, one of the few things that Steve Jobs means to me.
I know we were sort of expecting some bad news, but as I reflect on it, hiring Tim Cook probably was one of the best things that he ever did. I'm sure that he wouldn't hire somebody that wouldn't be really well thought out for accessibility. I think he's going to do a good job for the next 2 years. We're pretty safe. Who doesn't think of Steve Jobs when you pick up an iOS device of some kind? I do. I help people every day with iOS devices. I put in people's hands devices that just work. Some need training, some don't. Some can pick up the device and have it running, such as myself. I remember picking up the iOS device for the first time and thinking, God, this is just really cool. I did have the person turn on the voiceover for me while I was purchasing the device, and in the car I was downloading apps. That's how eager I was to get started.
Steve has done a lot of good for the blind community, the disabled community in general, with the accessibility options, you know, that he's added to the iPhone 4 and the iPod Touch and all the other devices over the last 3 or 4 years. And Steve has done a great job throughout the years of making Apple a bigger and better company for everybody. And, you know, I'm not sure what that's going to do to the future of the company. I think the presentation the other day wasn't quite the same as it was with Steve Jobs being there in the past. So I guess time will tell.
Hello, this is Robert Carter calling from the Tech Doctor podcast. And I'm really calling to express my deep sadness about the death of Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs first touched my life in 1978-79 when I got the idea from someone that the Apple II computer could speak what was on the screen. I quickly got one, and well, let's just say that it's been going from there ever since. Of course, there was that 25-year break where didn't use Macs but used PCs. But in 2006, when Steve did a keynote address, he demonstrated the voice over technology that is built into Mac OS X. And he did it in such a classy way. He didn't single out people with disabilities. He just said, we've made this usable by everyone. And it was a wonderful demonstration of voiceover, and it gave me such a fabulous respect and genuine fondness for Steve Jobs, if nothing else, his realization that people with disabilities are important to the Apple community also. And it admittedly took a long time in coming, but I've been a big Apple user and Apple fan since that time, and I think Steve Jobs was just absolute master of design and creating quality products, and I will miss him dearly. I don't think I've been this sad about the death of a public figure that I didn't know personally since I was a kid, and the Kennedy brothers were killed, and Martin Luther King was killed, and just remember how sad that felt to me, and this is similar to that, so... Those are some of my thoughts about the death of Steve Jobs. And the bright spot is that tomorrow I get to order my iPhone 4S, and so I'm excited about that. That's going to be really fun to work with some of the new, especially the new Siri voice recognition technology. So even without Steve, I'm confident that Apple's going to march on and continue producing great products, but for me, it's a very sad day. So long from the Tech Doctor.
So this is Wade Wingler with the Assistive Technology Update podcast in Easter Seals Crossroads in Indianapolis. And we at the Endata Project recognize the art, beauty, and accessibility that Steve Jobs brought to the world of technology. We kind of feel like his contributions will echo for generations. I think that the work that Apple's done, and by extension Steve over the years, has really done a lot to impact. The fact that art and beauty is part of design with Apple products, I think, you know, extends itself to accessibility. One of my favorite things I always liked was the stories, whether or not they were true, was that Steve liked to make sure his devices were lickable. And, you know, they used to joke that he would take a device and actually run his tongue over the thing to make sure that it was smooth and approachable. But I think, you know, that whole lickable concept that Steve Jobs talked about extends to the concept of usability and design and probably assistive technology as well. So I don't know if Steve was behind accessibility at Apple, but he certainly got out of the way and let it happen if it wasn't, you know, something that he was a champion for. I don't know what this means long term for Apple and accessibility, but it's certainly kind of a changing of the guard or a milepost in our history of technology.
And there you have 9 audio files, and Lisa is going to read the first 3 of many emails we got, and then we're each going to put in our 2 cents and then cover some other news. But Lisa, what do you have there?
I have some excellent emails, and we'd like to thank all of you for your contributions. We got some really fine material. The first is from Jim Fruchterman of Benetech fame, and he writes, "When Steve Jobs helped launch the Apple II, it created the computer accessibility revolution. Today, the Apple iMac, iPad, iPhone, and iPod Touch represent the best of built-in accessibility. It's very appropriate to celebrate these 2 landmarks and the seminal contribution of Steve Jobs in ensuring that computers were a tool usable by everyone." Our next person writes, Steve Jobs was an amazing man with an unforgettable story. His ability to develop Apple from a home project into one of the most valuable companies in the world and constantly revolutionizing one industry after another was nothing short of miraculous. He had a way of enriching lives through his love of science and art. I owe Steve my utmost gratitude for so much of what I have today: my job, my ability to communicate with the digital world, and my appreciation of science and art as a mutual concept. I am truly saddened at his passing. Best regards from Hai Huyen Lai, Technical Support Specialist, KNFB Reading Technology, Inc. And finally, from Damon Rose, from universal access through VoiceOver to the blind girl in the iPhone 4S video. First we were helped. Now we're target consumers. Rest in peace, Steve.
Okay, Lisa, since you have the mic, do you want to go ahead and give your vibe? What was your feeling when you heard?
Well, I have not had the history with Apple that some have. My first really meaningful introduction to Apple was through the iPhone. And I'm a little embarrassed to say I kind of scoffed at first. I thought, oh, you know, this is flat and we're supposed to use this. You know, my background is as a rehab teacher, so I'm picturing lock dots and things all over the iPhone. And I was just so blown away and so impressed by the fact. It reminded me of a quote I've heard that has been attributed to Helen Keller. While they were saying among themselves it could not be done, it was done, and he really did it. And if he did not do it as an individual, he gathered that core group of people around him who did it, and he really raised the standards of what we can expect for accessibility and what's achievable as well.
All right. Well, let me ask Mr. Joe. You've been in the AT industry for quite a while. What are your thoughts?
You know, for me, this is the first time I have felt something for someone who was not related close to me and I've never met since John Lennon was shot. You know, it just, where that was a sudden, amazing act of violence, and this was not, it still was something very deep and very meaningful, because there aren't that many collective things in our community these days that kind of touch all of us. And whether you like him or not, whether you agree with him or not, whether you're a Mac fan or not, you can't ignore the power and the icon status that was Steve Jobs. I am just been in reflection mode all day today, and listening to all the great tributes that others have done, be it the laser printer that he championed, Pixar, and what he did with that after he got it from Lucas, to changing the way the record industry and the movie industry works. I mean, very few people have that ability to do what he did. And, you know, on top of all of that, I've never owned an Apple product until the iPad. And I'm probably going to be in a two or three iPad family, because here's a talking sheet of paper. And that is something that I've seen demonstrated in various types over the last 10 years in various places, and Apple did it. And, you know, mostly because of Steve and his vision to take the tablet computer into a different way. So, I mean, if anything, I think that's something that's just amazing, and I don't think we're going to see his kind again very soon.
Pete Bosley, your thoughts?
Well, I, you know, some people are going to call me a sap for this, but you know, when I read the news, the first thought I had wasn't about accessibility. It wasn't about the iPhone. It wasn't about Apple. My first thought was, wow, you know, Steve has kids and he has a wife, and they must be devastated. And all of us are going to be here mourning the loss of, Admittedly, a great leader in the technology field, and someone who's done great things for our community. But, you know, these kids, they lost their dad. His wife lost her husband. And for me, that was kind of the first thing that sort of came to mind.
I also have lost family to cancer, and I know it could not have been easy for the family, let alone Steve, to grin and bear it and do those keynotes under probably tremendous pressure and pain. So in another way, I'm glad he's not suffering any longer either. So it's just amazing what he was able to do under extraordinary circumstances. And if you think about the thing he did with the city council, where he did the new Apple building, it was very moving, and it certainly puts a lot of things in perspective with the Apple announcements this week. You know, I've heard that it was, you know, a very subdued, for obvious reasons, announcements there at Cupertino. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting what happens next. But I think over the next couple of weeks, we're going to see a lot of crazy rumors. Not that that doesn't follow Apple a lot, but you know, you just have to sit back and see what happens over the next 18 to 36 months. I don't think you'll see it in Apple very soon on whether this affects them positively or negatively.
I think that one thing I want to mention to everyone is Steve gave a commencement address to people at this college. Are going to kill me if I get this wrong. It's Stanford, right?
Correct.
Stanford. And there's plenty of links out there to this video. So I encourage everybody, if you've got a few minutes, to go listen to this speech, because he just had some amazing things to say, and almost prophetically, you know, talking about, you know, the fact that when he realized that he might die, that really puts things into sharp focus, and I think that's true for all of us.
Yeah, that's a beautiful speech. He talks about death being the great equalizer, the commonality that we all share, and a great motivator. And he says it shortly after he had, you know, understood that he had beaten the first round of cancer of the pancreatic kind. So it's a very moving speech. The transcript is also out there, too, for those who want to get it. I think I tweeted that this morning. So there's that one. And the 1997 WWDC speech is one that people have pointed to a lot, where there was a developer who just got in his face and, you know, said, what happened? What did you do for the last, you know, 7 years? And, the guy was very sharp on his feet and has a wonderful answer for him. And, marketer, designer, businessman, some will say positive or negative to that. But he, again, is one of the very few people in this industry that was able to shape things in a way that he decided it was going to be. And it was a very unique consumer experience. And, everything that people said he couldn't do, he sort of did. And I think it's a story of redemption. I think in the end, for him to, you know, go to Next and then come back and get an opportunity and, you know, fix everything that he believed he had gotten wrong during the Lisa is really, really impressive, and I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, there's so much that could be said. I mean, dealing with something like that for 7 years, the toll it takes on you and your family. The things I'm going to remember, the lady here just said, I won't memorialize him, which made me think, thank you, I appreciate your products, but I'm not going to memorialize you. And my thought was, okay, so maybe she realizes that he was smart enough to see that we are a market and a community. And if nothing else, if his efforts and Apple's successes lead other companies looking at the disability community as a market, could be one of the most greatest contributions for the disability community. But obviously, got to give him thanks. Finally, equal access.
Absolutely.
Without paying more than anyone else. And, you know, finally, affordable GPS currency and so many more features. The ability to read, such a basic thing that people take for granted. And something few people could care about, the ability to install my own operating system without sighted help, meaning I don't have to wait a few days. Basic things. But just having a dream and a goal and going for it. You're going to be missed, my friend. Hopefully, your legacy will inspire others to do more. But we probably should cover some other stuff. There's quite a bit going on. Apple announced
and
Tuesday.
And also, Michael,
yes.
Let's also, if you guys have things that you'd like to add, we're still taking in your submissions. You can do that right there on iBlink Radio. You can go to the iReport feature and leave us a message there, where that's where a lot of them came from tonight. Or you can drop us an email at resources@cerotalk.com, or you can call us on the Blab line, and we'll be taking those comments all through the weekend and using them on our other programs, and we'll put them all together in a standalone package, so you can listen to them later as well.
Yeah, there's some other audio and emails we haven't played yet, and we'll put those in Serial Talk Podcast 80 and some standalone stuff. So put in your 2 cents if you like. Well, Apple, iPhone 4S. And my question is, if you already own the 4, I have the 3G, so why not upgrade? But 3GS, actually. But if you have the 4, is it worth the upgrade? Lisa has said no. What about you, Pete? You spending the money tomorrow? You going to be there at 3 a.m.?
So we have this question every year, because I remember doing a similar thing last summer when the iPhone 4 was announced. And again, I think it's a matter of things that are important to you. I see a lot of people asking about this issue, so I want to kind of clear the air a little bit. The enhanced camera, while it is very cool and the pictures are compelling, unless something changes on the back end of things, the prospects for OCR are relatively unchanged from what they have been currently. Without getting too technical, the APIs for accessing images and camera functions and things like that just aren't designed for OCR. So at this point, I think that the chances of the hardware alone bringing significant enhancements along that front are pretty slim. On the other hand, the Siri voice assistant looks very cool. It's anybody's guess how it performs in real-world usage scenarios. So I'll leave that to the post-acquisition reviews. As to the answer to your question, Michael, I think you already know the answer to that.
301,
many
you'll
have
be
said,
there.
Oops, I'm sorry. As many have said, it really seems to be a matter of preference. I was actually talking last night to a woman who works for Apple, and she said, oh, isn't Siri something that you would really get a lot out of? And I said, well, you know, sometimes when I need information, I'm already out and about, and I don't want to sit there possibly by myself having a heart-to-heart with my phone. And I said, I really appreciate the ability to just input via the phone itself or with a Bluetooth keyboard to input my information or look for a piece of information, a number, some such like that. And so I think it really has to do with the mode that you're used to operating in, you know, and where you are. I think that, you know, the features that one person may say, wow, this is it, you know, I really want this phone, might not rock somebody else's world, but again, it's excellent that there are so many features out there, and I would think that for people, especially with motor impairments, that Siri might be very helpful. Maybe they would have some difficulty actually manipulating, doing the various gestures, but could easily press that home button in and give the phone commands. And it'll be interesting to know also how it does with different kinds of accents, possibly with speech that is somewhat impaired. That'll be very interesting to see.
I'm excited about Siri, if it works. Now, we know there's going to be unique circumstances, noisy environments, speech impediments, dialects. But if it works, it's going to be awesome. But I appreciate that insight that it's not going to improve the OCR, because everyone's like, oh, 8 megapixel. Awesome. But there's other factors.
I don't know that it's not going to improve things, but as things stand, a significant enhancement would be more easily achieved by giving us a little better control over the camera.
And understand that camera API is a part of the operating system, and Apple holds that pretty dear. So that's FaceTime, that's the new camera features that have been added, the backlit stuff that they're doing, the illumination on the back of the camera and phone. I mean, there's a lot of things that are tied into it. And Pete and I have talked offline. I'm one of these guys that firmly believes that if there's going to be OCR, I think it's going to be Apple that does OCR on the iPhone. I think that is possible, and I think it's just not something that they're interested in yet. But given time, you know, the way that they can get at certain parts of that phone, they could really do an amazing job.
What about the
this
processor?
This goes back to it.
Will this help us maybe reduce choppy speech, or does that just have to do with the sound chip?
I think that's going to be more a function of available RAM. As we've gone through the beta, developer betas, we've seen different settings that they've applied to the voices, and I think that they're experimenting with voice quality versus processor and RAM and memory load. So it'll be interesting to see if the 4S is allowed to have a higher quality voice than the iPhone 4, per se.
And there was no mention of RAM. So do we assume it stays the same as the 4?
There was no mention of RAM in the announcement, but I think that we'll probably see a jump. I'd be surprised if there wasn't a jump in RAM, given the dual-core processor.
But, you know, I don't know how much that will work with what's going on, because it seems like they've done the dual core chip. Naturally, there's a little keeping up with the Joneses, but if you're going to have that speech on all the time, then you've got to dedicate some resources to it. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk, Pete, I know you've probably seen it, about Siri works just fine on my 4, my 3GS, when it was an app before it was owned by Apple, and now, you know, it's an iPhone Phone S exclusive kind of thing. But I'm thinking they really tweak that a lot when they pulled it over to the hardware. Certainly we'll know when it's released, but it seems like to have some dedicated speech like that on that device, it seems like it would need that extra horsepower.
I agree with you, and we'll get all the hardware specs, folks, shortly after the phone gets into the public hands. iFixit will tear it down.
Yeah.
Pete will have the thing
day one.
Yeah. How many screws in there, Pete? Well, AppleCare now covers accidents, so $99 for 2 years. Pete, does that make a difference, or are you still gonna go with SquareTrade?
I think I'll probably go with the AppleCare Plus, and there is to let everybody know, there is a $49 charge for each of accidental event that causes you to need a repair. My main reason for that isn't anything about SquareTrade, because they're great. It's more that I have a couple of Apple stores locally, so if I need to get something fixed, I can go in person and get that handled right away.
One reason I think things are going to be different without Steve: what about this password exploit? Would you call that an oversight? Is that something Steve would have caught?
You know, I don't really think so. The security issues that you're seeing were always going to be there. They're there in everything. And the fact that the Macintosh and iOS operating systems are becoming somewhat more juicy targets is why we tend to see more and more publicized exploits. This is not an uncommon thing to see happen, and Apple's going to have to learn this lesson, hopefully not quite as hard as Microsoft and Adobe had to, but we'll see.
So it looks like now we can use Google Chrome 14. Have you played with that?
I have not.
Superior to Safari in any way? No? Okay. No one knows about that. That's it. Well, some other non-Mac stuff. Google Plus opens to all. Has anyone played with that?
You know, I've messed with Google Plus, and I have trouble with one of the basic tasks, and that's adding people to circles. And, you know, this is something that I haven't tried on a ton of browsers and with a ton of screen readers, so, you know, I don't want to get a bunch of people on Twitter telling me, it works fine. So, you know, if that's the case, then that was the case for you. But in my particular case, when I tried it with System Access and Internet Explorer on Windows, it did not work correctly. So the fact that I haven't explored that any further kind of tells you how much I care about Google Plus at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you. I took a look at it, but it was a very kind of a quick look. I was more curious to know what it was all about. And when I realized that it was another social networking site, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, do I really have the time? Do I really want to get involved in something else? And although I've heard that I guess we're straying back into Apple land. I haven't played with this either, but I've heard that Google Plus on the iPhone is relatively accessible.
I heard that too, but I'm not really a social networker via phone type person. I more do that stuff on the computer.
I have a wonderful link for End of Line that I found that is a lovely parody about the new social network, not Google Plus. To avoid these social networks, the first thing you must do is not use Google Plus. So read a book, eat a cantaloupe, but do anything but not join Google Plus. And, you know, I can understand that. There is a little bit of social media fatigue. And how many networks can you be a part of? You know, certainly we've learned with Facebook that what you know as your homepage won't be your homepage, and we're going to put the sticker over here, and then we're going to move this content around here, and on and on and on. So there's some people who felt like maybe all these changes, this addition of video, this addition of sharing and things like that, is Facebook MySpacing itself. But I don't know if people are going to migrate to yet another. If they're going to do it, they're going to probably do it to Google because there isn't that many, you know, alternatives out there that are screaming out at people. And not everybody's going to be able to launch and get 20 million, you know, users the way that Google can. But
well, they've got an advantage. They've got everybody with a Gmail account, which is most people.
Exactly. Or anybody with an Android phone. So, I mean, there's some cross-pollinization there. And certainly that's to their advantage. Microsoft has tried this how many times? The live network? So, you know, there's certain
things. Well, all they've got is Hotmail, people.
That's true. But certain things that just seem to elude Microsoft, and social seems to be one of them. So if anybody's going to give Facebook a run for its money and certainly I want it to be more accessible, but man, I want somebody to give Facebook a run for their money. It's going to be Google.
I think the big story is Google Wallet. There's only one phone, one credit card, but I think that's the beginning of a real change to the future.
Mobile payments is going to be a big battleground over the next 2 years. Be it NFC, be it through what Google is doing with the other banks all, you know, pooling together to do their own thing. There seems to be four or five players, and it almost feels like the way that people were jostling after VHS. You know, there was DVD, there was DivX, there was all these different competing formats. There was, you know, later on HDVD versus Blu-ray. And that's what it feels like. This feels like a format war. And really, my money is on the banks on that one. So if there's enough banks and enough credit, then that's probably where the retailers will go, regardless of whoever's backing it, Apple, Google, whatever. So that's the bigger one that I would probably, and I'm guessing there, but I'm feeling pretty confident in that because you've seen that before. I mean, how many times had we seen new credit cards launch, and you take Discover, you know, and then later on, what do you mean you've never heard of Diners Club? I mean, these things come and go, but in a format war, it does definitely come down to whether retail will accept it. If retail has to go and get all new cash registers or have to spend an inordinate amount of time to train the person behind the counter how to accept that payment, then that's going to be a problem, and they'll go for the shortest and easiest way to get it done.
I agree with Joe. The banks are going to win that one. From a personal perspective, the mobile payment thing gives me a little pause. But I'm of the security persuasion, so I guess
that's my question for you, Pete.
Nobody.
What mechanism is in place to prevent me from taking your phone and buying things?
Well, presumably, and I haven't seen any of this software, but presumably there's some kind of PIN code that you have to enter in the phone. Now whether or not you call that secure is arguable, because I don't really call that secure. 90% of the time, if I have enough information about somebody, I can guess their PIN. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm going with it. You know, you've got a situation where right now you've got a physical card that presumably you have to have in hand, unless, you know, somebody has the numbers or they've skimmed it. But, you know, when you're going with things like phones or microchips that can be reprogrammed, that's a situation that may present some further issues.
And that kicks into ease of use as well. If I've got to have two or three factor authentication on my phone, then that's going to slow things down and I don't remember. But, you know, I've seen some people say, well, okay, we'll use facial recognition on the front side camera and then you type in your thing. And so there's two, you know, factor authentication. And, you know, I was thinking to myself, okay, that's interesting. And again, we're back to, you've got to have a certain phone, you've got to have a certain megapixel, and there's going to be some biometric issues involved with that. And it's just interesting how that's going to go. But it beats a lot of what, you know, in the futurist books from 7 years ago, there was one where you would have it in your tennis shoe or your loafer, and you would shake hands with the other person, and you would wear a ring, and they would wear a ring, and then you would make the connection, and you would be able to transfer data. So I like the idea of a phone, or maybe tapping it or connecting a little better than actually you know, having to make physical contact with somebody.
A few other stories, throw them out, see which ones you have comments or thoughts on. Industry's reaction. No, no, no. No AT&T and T-Mobile. Good, bad? Do you care?
T-Mobile and AT&T, that's going to be an interesting thing to see how it plays out. I am happy to see that the government did not immediately just rubber stamp the transaction. I still think that there's a good chance that this will yet be something that will yet happen and yet be approved. AT&T has a lot of money and a lot of power to pour into this, and I wouldn't count them out of it yet.
After the Comcast merger with Universal, and knowing what I knew of the Ma Bell days, I mean, I grew up as a young broadcaster and what Michael and I remember as the Fairness Doctrine and the 777 rule, which was you could only own 7 radio stations, 7 newspapers, and 7 television stations in a given area or a given market. And later that became the 12-12-12 and 36-36, and then it just was like, whatever, here comes 3,600 channels owned by one guy. I'm one of these guys that doesn't like all of that, mainly because I watched Citizen Kane as a kid, and I've always remembered William Randolph Hearst. So there were reasons why we did these things. So any type of conglomeration or merger always bothers me from that, only for the fact that I enjoy competition. I enjoy having the option. I enjoy having choice, even more than the 1984 Big Brother aspects of it. So for me, I'm kind of in a mind that I'm kind of glad that, like Pete said, the government didn't roll over like a dog with a milk bone on this one. But at the same time, if T-Mobile can't pull it together, then they'll just sell off their assets and they'll get them anyway. So I'm not sure if this isn't an exercise in futility.
Well, there's an interesting aside to that, though, Joe. The FCC can fail to approve T-Mobile selling its spectrum licenses to AT&T. So, you know, there's an extra fly in the ointment there for them. They might be able to sell, you know, equipment, but, you know, if they can't acquire the spectrum, which is really what they're after, if you really want to know brass tacks, they want the frequency spectrum. So, if they can't get that, there's no point.
The towers and the coverage. They would love to get the towers and the coverage. Not that they couldn't spend $4 billion and build it, but it would also be nice just to have.
But the thing is that given their current spectrum situation, even if they had more towers, it probably wouldn't help them very much.
And let's not count out Sprint throwing down all that money for the iPhone S, 4S. I mean, that's what was it, 20 million, 30 million phones they promised to sell? So
30 million at $20 billion, right?
Yeah. That's throwing down the big money. That is high Vegas stakes. That's big.
I think the article was by BGR, and they made a good point. They said, you know, Sprint bet the farm. They bet the company on this. So, you know, I hope it works out for them. I don't know.
Yeah.
Pete, should we be concerned about this hackers break SSL TLS?
From a theoretical perspective, we should all be concerned about that. TLS v1.0, which is the attack that they demonstrated, is the most widely used encryption scheme for SSL at this point, and the particular cipher that is vulnerable to this attack is, again, very widely used, and there aren't many alternatives at this point, especially given the browser compatibility situation. On the other hand, this attack relies on someone having compromised your machine in some other way, compromised your browser, because this is a client-side browser attack against the encryption scheme that SSL uses to protect traffic. So, while this is something to definitely be concerned about and something that those of us in the security arena are going to be watching very closely for you guys on a daily basis at this point, even if you are really worried about it, there's not much you can do.
Yay.
Oh, we hear about Sony and the Android Walkman. You going to buy one of those, Joe?
Yeah, we talked about this on Sarah Talk. I cannot explain why I like this idea, but I really like this idea. And I know Pete's a big fan of the Zune, kidding, of course. Yeah, pretty much. Microsoft won't admit that. It's not dead. It's just pining for the fjords. The Android backing of it is neat because on one of the units, and I'm not sure if it'll make it to Japan, I'm crazy enough to import it, we'll be able to use the Android store. And so that means you could possibly get TalkBack, Spiel, or maybe multiple accessibility on the device. And I think that would be really neat if you can. But even if you can't, you know, I've played with Rockbox, and I've modded other MP3 players with different things, and I used to use an Arcos 504, so I've used some crazy MP3 players over my time, so I kind of like this in lots of ways, and I used to have a Sony Walkman, so there's a little bit of a soft spot in my heart for that brand. Not that I think anybody under the age of 10 would know what those two words put together were, but it's neat that they're trying. I think that they've got to do something. A little too late, I'm not sure, but I won't have to use iTunes if I want to use it.
So which one of the five Android stores are you going to have access to?
Well, there, in China alone, there's five. The question is will it work with the Amazon MP3 store? Can I sideload it, you know, and see if that'll work?
I had to go there.
Somebody on Droid Life will probably explain how to do it, too. That's the crazier thing. Them or Lifehacker, someone will sit down and figure out how to do it.
Okay, we've opened up for questions. Go ahead, Lisa.
Go for it, Lisa.
The thing I find that's really interesting about this is they're using a familiar term, Walkman, and I could see this really appealing to people in their 50s, 60s, you know, even 70s.
Old people like Joe.
I used to Walkman back in the day. There was no problem. You know,
me and Michael used to roll around all our time with our Sony cans and our Walkman.
All those things had great radios.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it kind of introduces that doability factor. Like, well, I could work a Walkman, and, you know, this can't be much different. And just by marketing it in familiar terms, they may really have something there.
And if Apple decides to pull away a little bit from the standalone MP3 player market, which of course a lot of people speculated this week because there were no great improvements to the iPod line, other than you're going to have Mickey Mouse watches faces on your Nano, which again is kind of cool, and you do not have to use the dongle for the Nike Plus to be able to do the pedometer, because the pedometer is now inside the unit. So I mean, they've done cutesy little things, and
I wonder how Nike felt about that.
Yeah, probably not too good. Watch bands, you know, sell like crazy that can fit the Nano. And so that's kind of a side market that blew up for them. But, you know, there's no improvement as far as the camera goes on the Touch. I don't think they're going to get the chip upgrade in the same way that the iPhone is. And I think at some point, these guys are standing around saying, look, at some point Apple's going to get out of this game. It's not going to be worth it. It's not going to be able to manufacture it. And we can still make things rather cheaper. For those parents who aren't going to buy their kids an iPhone, or for those people who don't need a communications device in that. So it's just a matter of when others can get back into that market. And let's remember that Sony considered MP3 a fad and pushed the mini disc another 2 years. And that's what allowed Apple to jump in and make a really interesting first-gen iPod, which is now 10 years old, and evolve that over time into what we now see before us. So, you know, it's all a matter of, you know, market perspective and who's got the option and who's got the juice to be able to come in and take it.
Let's talk about the Facebook redesign. And Pete, I'm curious if you think it's going to actually improve or hurt accessibility, or has anyone heard any comments from anyone that it's easier or harder to use?
The new Facebook design is, from a screen reader perspective, actually relatively accessible. The issue that really, the issue that really comes into play is that logically it doesn't make a lot of sense. And what I mean by logically is, while I can visually see this ticker that the news ticker that Facebook added, I think for a screen reader only user, conceptualizing that that's an ever changing region of the page, and then after that, dumping them down into what Facebook calls the top stories is a jarring change. So I think that depending on someone's level of use or their level of ability to conceptualize the page, and maybe someone showing them what's where, it's going to be another difficulty.
We have new VMware for Windows and Mac. Have you played with those, Pete? Does it really help?
I upgraded my VMware Fusion on the Mac side on a couple of machines. I haven't had a chance to play with it too much. One thing I will tell you is there was a widely circulated audio fix by HLLF on Twitter that after upgrading your VM to the new HD hardware specs and such, that audio fix disappeared. Now, there's some way to restore that functionality, but I haven't really dug into that yet. From an accessibility perspective, things haven't changed much on Fusion.
Okay. Of course, we have the discontinuation of Quitter for Twitter, and another article talking about all the keyboard shortcuts from the website that you can use. Pete, do you know of any screen reader browser combo to accomplish that?
Well, the issue with the keyboard shortcuts, and you guys mentioned this in the last Serotech podcast, is that the screen reader is going to intercept any keyboard commands that you give the website. The other issue is that Twitter uses mouse position to determine what tweet you're focused on. So if you issue this, even if you were able to issue the keyboard command, if your mouse wasn't in the right place, you would retweet the wrong thing, etc., etc. So that having been said, I don't think the website is going to be useful in the context of that. However, it's relatively useful if you just use standard screen reader navigation. It's really a shame what happened to the Quitter project. I hope to see maybe in the future a change in position on that, but I do understand where Christopher is coming from. Everybody, you have to understand that Christopher's in college. He doesn't have a lot of free time, and he wasn't treated great by the by some members of the community. So I certainly understand his frustration. And you know, there's fault on both sides, but I'm not really sure what else to say about that.
Mike Arrigo comments on the updates to Pandora that have made it accessible for iOS and Android, for the most part.
It's been a long time coming, and I communicated with Pandora probably 3-4 years ago when I first heard about them. And they were not sure how to make Flash accessible, and I offered them some suggestions, and I never really heard anything. The new interface is better, for sure, but I honestly don't believe that that was on purpose. I think that that was a happy accident of the new interface that they designed, so I still think that there's work to be done with those guys. Not that they're not nice people, but...
But what a good thing it is to start to see other people than Google and Apple and others start to go HTML5. I mean, the landslide is definitely coming. There's a lot of people, you know, this just recently we had the release of Adobe Flash 11. And so there are a lot of people starting to say, why should I even begin to adopt that? And, you know, last month, to fit within the confines of this show, Adobe said, look, we figured out a way to make Flash work on your iDevice. It's okay. Everything's good. Everything's fine. No trouble here. I think the pendulum has started to really sway, and certainly with as many platforms that are rolling these days, with Chrome, with iOS, with Windows and all flavors and manners of that, there has to be a cross-platform tool for individuals to be able to get to as many eyes and ears and fingers as they can. And, last month I saw that Chrome ad with Angry Birds. And first of all, I was shocked that I saw a Chrome ad during The Simpsons. But, after I recovered from that, it was like, oh my God, I just saw a Chrome ad during The Simpsons, and pushing HTML5, pushing all these different, tools. And I think over the next 18 months, you're really going to start to see that. And it's great to see Pandora jumping in there.
And I want to say that, HTML5 is not a magic bullet. HTML5 is a loose set of standards, and there's a lot of HTML5 things that aren't going to be accessible. So we can't sit back and say, well, let's wait for HTML5, and then things will be better. We need to keep an eye on things, and we need to keep advocating. And honestly, this is something that we're going to have to keep doing. And any group that has, any group that has things that they want has to keep advocating for themselves. It's just it's life.
One of the final things I want to talk about is affordable internet. Now, of course, we have the Comcast $9.95 a month, but of course, you must have a student in school and the free lunch program and mandated basically to get NBC. Now, AT&T, someone pointed out, you can get it for $14.95 a month.
And drop by your local Comcast office to give your DNA sample.
Yeah.
And it must be on every third Thursday of the month.
But even the AT&T thing.
And 12:05.
Even this AT&T thing, someone wanted me to mention it, but I believe that's only for a year, $14.95 for DSL.
And that was all lip service to get the mergers to happen, or to get net neutrality not to happen, or to appease certain people who needed, for whatever election year that they were in, to look like they had really taken it to the big guys. So while I think it's great, and I see ads for the Comcast deal a lot because I'm near Houston, so I see the Xfinity thing all the time. It is kind of a very loose set of standards that have to be able to be met in order to get to that. And it makes sense. I mean, they've got to make money too. But, it's a shame that we're like 25th in the United States, in the world for broadband. And certainly some of that comes down to region and size and rural area. But even in larger cities, I'm not that far away from Houston, but I don't get the big mother load of data that the big city does. And that's kind of a shame that we're still into that. And hopefully white spaces will change that a little.
Pete, if you play with this Logitech Harmony Link, allowing you to use iOS or Android as a universal remote.
I haven't played with it. I have a Logitech Harmony physical remote that I use to control my AV setup, but I'm a little hesitant to go out and drop $100 on a piece of hardware that may or may not have an accessible app to go with it. So someone else go out and get it and tell me.
And you've threatened to sell me your Logitech Google TV, and I've threatened to buy it. So that's even scarier because if they do have a Google TV update, there's a rumor going around that that Logitech unit is upgradable, even though it's a little less hardware than some of the specs I've seen floating around for the new Google TV stuff.
Oh, that Logitech thing is in the pile to take to the range to use as target practice.
Oh, okay.
Well, lock and load.
Good to know.
Well, we've come to the end of our hour. I guess we'll take final comments. We'll start with you, Lisa. Anything excite you since September 1st to date? Is that a no?
That was a, I'm thinking, nothing in particular, but it is encouraging to see, I mean, we may not have major news on all fronts in 1 month, but it's interesting to see that, sometimes we take two steps forward and one step back. By my step back, I'm thinking of the whole Amazon Kindle issue, but it does seem that in little ways, we are moving forward, and are, as we work toward it, we're finding more things accessible than they were. And so nothing in particular for the month, but definitely a lot to feel positive about in general.
Yeah, I assume you'd definitely talk more about Amazon Kindle. That actually fell into October, which is why I didn't mention it. But the fire. Get all fired up about that. Joe, your thoughts.
Down in flames. Down in flames. Go read that article. Go to Saratalk.com.
Mr. Pete.
You know, I've given Google a hard time throughout this the last whatever several years, so I'm going to say that
you.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, I'm going to say that I'm actually excited to see some of the things that they're some of the changes that are being made with Google Docs, because that's an important thing where I spend my time, because you know, in an educational institution, we have a lot of professors that use Google Docs, and groups of students use Google Docs. And while I'm not a student really right now, it touches close to home, because I was, and I remember what things were like then. And so thank you, Google, for stepping up to the plate and working on that, and keep up the good work. Let's you know, spread this a little further than ChromeVox and you know, NVDA necessarily. So, you know, I appreciate that they are stepping up on that front, and I hope to see continued work towards better accessibility on all of the Google Apps projects.
So as of today, it's ChromeVox for Docs, I guess. But with that, we're going to put the wraps on this month in AT for September 2011.
Hang on one sec. Hang on one sec.
Yes,
everybody, if you want, you can continue this conversation over in SAMNet chat. So if you aren't a member of SAMNet, System Access Mobile Network, you can join for a free 7-day trial. Jump on over to www.satogo.com, and you can come talk to all of us in the tech chat room. So all you have to do is go over to the chat area and then go down to the tech room and join on in. Of course, you'll need a microphone if you already have one of those, then you're good to go, and come on in and continue the conversation about this and all the other topics that we have going on, and share your stories about Steve.
And on October 20, we're going to have a great discussion, some more advocacy stuff, including Lainey Feingold. We're going to find out if we can actually get those airline websites more accessible and those kiosks to talk, but it's going to take efforts from you and me and the friends down the street. So with that, thanks for listening to Serospectives, sponsored tonight by Vanda Pharmaceuticals. www.non24hourregistry.com. So until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.